Welcome to the Bath Institute for Rheumatic Diseases Information Podcasts. I'm Mel Brook. I'm the Patient and Public Engagement Programme Director for BIRD. In this podcast, which is part one of two, I talk to expert guest Ben Davis, who is an advanced practice physiotherapist at the Royal National Hospital for Rheumatic Diseases in Bath. Ben specialises in persistent pain and supports people with it. He helps them to better understand the biopsychosocial factors that can affect it. Biopsychosocial describes a way of looking at the connections between biology, psychology, and the social and environmental factors that can affect something like pain. Just an extra note before we start, we did have some issue with the audio recording sound on this podcast. We've done our best to fix it and the content is still highly valuable, but you may need to adjust your volume controls on whatever listening device you're using. We apologise for this, but hopefully it's not going to spoil your listening experience. Hello and welcome, and thanks for coming onto the podcast today, Ben Davis. So the essence of this podcast theme began at BIRD's Rheumatology Research Showcase event, which was earlier in the year, and you presented a really interesting session on pain, and it was so interesting we had to ask you to come and do a podcast with us. So thanks for that, Ben. I thought maybe we could start with perhaps you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and sort of, you know, what you actually do.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks very much for the invite. My name is Ben Davis. I'm currently an advanced practice physiotherapist in rheumatology. I work here at the RUH in Bath. I qualified 23 years ago from University West of England in Bristol. So I've been a physio quite some time, and actually quite quickly in my career. I got a job that supported a pain management program, not for anything particularly rheumatological, but just for general persistent pain. So that sort of turned my interest towards long-term pain quite early in my career. And I've been in pain ever since, really, not personally, but as a career, you know, specialty. I've worked in pain through increasing specialization up when I lived in Yorkshire, delivering this secondary care pain management program. And then as I moved back to the Bath area, I did a PhD in pain related to diabetes, and then worked as a community pain clinic, or running a local community pain clinic in the Bath area, until about 18 months ago when I moved to the RUH for the opportunity to work in this multidisciplinary team and this service. So pain is definitely a thread that's run through all of those years. And it's been a really interesting journey working with people who have pain, and also understanding how we can best help those people.
Yes, and that was the thing that came across in the talk that you did earlier in the year, was it is so much more complex and interesting than people give it credit. And I think it's going to resonate and be very interesting for a lot of our listeners as well, because obviously a lot of musculoskeletal diseases, autoimmune conditions, they come with chronic pain, and we have to manage that on a day-to-day basis. So, I think this is going to be a good one, Ben, having heard it earlier in the year. Maybe we can start with that experience of pain and why it's such an important experience. Can you sort of outline what we do know about it?
I think one of the things that's really interesting is just to think about, if you like, from an evolution perspective, why do we have pain? I've lost count of the number of times I've told people on courses or in groups to say there are very small numbers of people in the world who don't experience pain. And everybody, you know, anybody who's listening to this who has persistent pain will probably sit there going, well, I wish that was me, but I didn't have pain. But actually, pain, to not have a pain experience means that you're far more likely to actually have a limited life. Into your 20s or 30s will be your expected life expectancy. Because without pain, you don't know that something may be happening in your body. So that could be the pain of a split appendix, the pain of a broken leg, the pain of an injury. So if anybody who's sat here listening to this podcast, if any one of your ancestors didn't have the ability to feel pain, you'd probably not be here. Mm. It is a really important experience that we could say, warns us of the, and this is an important distinction, of actual tissue damage or the potential for tissue damage. So there is, I think we understand now more so, even more so, pain can be there prior to tissue damage or as a sort of almost as an early warning, you know, stop doing what you're doing now because if you carry on, something might happen.
Mm.
So I think the experience of pain, one is, I mean, it is often unpleasant, of course, but it's also really critical to survival and getting you to a place where you can pass your genes on to your offspring. Without it, none of us would be here. So it's really important, but it can go wonky, is how I often describe it. It's an experience that can go a little bit wayward sometimes and become less useful than perhaps evolution had designed it to be. Obviously, I'm mixing some metaphors there, but how evolution led pain to be, it can become less useful than perhaps it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. So it has a bigger purpose than we probably give it credit for, don't we? That makes a lot of sense to think about it in terms of, well, if you didn't know you were in pain, something really awful could be happening inside you that you couldn't see.
I think it's also to recognise that pain for anybody never exists as purely a bodily experience. You know, pain always has an emotional experience, even if that's just the frustration of stubbing your toe. You know, the most acute minor injury that you might sustain, you know, some degree of pain, everybody will have some emotional response to that. And I think that begins to highlight that emotion and pain are integral parts of one another. We'll often think about clinicians like myself, physios, medics, nurses, OTs. You know, we are inherently trained to ask about the physicality, but we should always be broad enough to ask about the emotionality of the pain experience.
Mm.
Again, that goes both ways. If people on this, listen to this, think about times they've been emotionally upset at a funeral, at a time of life stress. Often some degree of bodily pain is part of that experience as well.
Yeah, that does make sense. Is that like when people say they're kind of brokenhearted and they literally feel, you know, a kind of a pain of loss, don't they, in that emotional situation?
Absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, you don't put that pain in your back. You don't put that pain in your knee. You don't put that pain in a finger joint, perhaps. But you ache.
Yeah.
And is that any different? Is that any different? It's still pain.
Yeah. No, that does make sense. So what do we know about the experience of pain?
So you mean sort of like, how is it that we become aware of? How does our system process yes. this experience? But I tend to do these sort of questions. And I do this every week that we have an AS group here, sort of residential. Is I do a bit of a compare and contrast now, but to compare what we used to think about pain, how we used to understand it, to how we currently understand it. And when you put some show notes together, I'm going to put a few pictures into that show notes. And what I want people to look at, if they've downloaded those show notes already or they want to get them, is there will be a picture of a little boy crouched down with his foot in a fire. And this is probably one of the most famous pain drawings, you know, in all of history. It was drawn by René Descartes, who was a French philosopher, mathematician in the 1600s, 15th, 16th century. He's the philosopher who said, I think, therefore I am. So he's a real skeptic about personal experience. But he did write about pain. And he did it at a time when he said to the church, you know, the Catholic Church at the time, you have the soul, you have the mind, give us the body. So give the scientists the body, you have the soul, to the church. And he creates this sort of split between mind and body. But if you look at that picture, this little boy figure crouched down with a foot in the fire. And what René Descartes said was, the fire, or the thing that's happening in the tissues, the fire is pulling on a hydraulic nervous system. He thought the nerves were fluid-filled. And that hydraulic message goes up the spinal cord into the brain. And in the brain, there's a little person called a homunculus, which means kind of like little man, little woman. And in the brain, in the pineal gland, this little person has the experience of the flame on the foot. So René Descartes did two things. He kind of drew this very straight line labeled diagram from fire outside the body to foot, to nervous system, to brain, to experience. And he also separated what we've almost just been talking about, mind from body, so that he splits the psychology from the physical. He splits mental health from physical health. Now, that sort of line label drawing, that sort of straight line is, of course, not accurate. I'm sure you've had times in your life when you sort of come to realize you've got an injury. Maybe you're a gardener. Maybe you suddenly realize there's some blood running down your arm. Where did this come from? How have I got an injury, but I've had no pain? And you've probably also had times when you've had maybe minor injuries or minor tissue injuries, maybe like a spot on your lip. But when you realize it feels huge. Or the pain of a paper cut. Really minor injury, isn't it? But that paper cut can feel absolutely, the worst pain. And of course, we also see people who have got major injuries, multi-limb trauma, really, up on our orthopedic wards, multi-limb trauma, really, really injured, yet they're not asking for much pain relief. So how does René Descartes' sort of model work when we can have little to no pain, little to no damage, yet high degrees of pain? And we can have high degrees of damage and low levels of pain. It just doesn't quite make full sense. So René Descartes was wrong. He didn't articulate a sort of full picture of pain. Yet, I think this is really important, sort of up to today, that idea is still really common. The idea that René Descartes articulates, if you came to me as a physio, if you came and you said, Ben, my knee hurts, I'm going to probably ask you questions about your knee. I'm going to probably physically assess your knee. I might ask colleagues who can do x-rays to x-ray your knee or MRI scan your knee. We might do surgeries to your knee and look at your cartilage. We're really good in the health service at sort of looking smaller and smaller and smaller, try and find the cause of that knee pain or that blood tests, etc. And sometimes, we find the problems, but sometimes we don't. And this is when we've got to be also be able to kind of pull back and think big picture, think what else is going on for somebody in their life that their whole system may be deciding that pain is appropriate. Pain's a really good motivator to make you change what you're doing. So that old model, that sort of straight line label model of René Descartes is it remains quite pervasive in the health service. Lots of orthopedic surgeons are very unlikely to ask questions about your mental health or ask about your social world or ask how is this impacting on you. They're going to want to know, do they operate or not?
So what we're saying then is that, I mean, you have that acute response. You kick your toe, it's really painful. You notice that, won't you? 9 times out of 10, that you're going to be hopping around, sort of cussing slightly. But then there's those things that you do that you haven't really noticed because you're busy with something else. So we're talking about how the mental state affects pain. Am I right?
Your kind of suggestion is really good. And if everyone will kick their toe. So this is a sort of thought experiment I often do with people on our course, and I've done it many times. So you kick your toe, you jump up off the kitchen table, at the kitchen table, you're wearing nothing on your feet, barefoot, and you kick the kitchen table hard enough to break a toe. Like you said, 9 out of 10 times we'll probably feel that when you be aware of it, will be somewhat frustrated. What if you jumped up because you're holding the winning lottery ticket?
Yeah,
You
you
jump
wouldn't
up.
notice so much, would you?
You kick the table just as hard. You break your toe in exactly the same way, but you're waving that winning lottery ticket. Mortgage is paid off. Gas bills are paid for years to come. I'm not saying you'll have no pain, but I would say you're going to have less pain and perhaps almost nothing that you notice.
Because the joy of the win cancels out the volume of the pain, maybe. Is that how it's working?
Often try and think about it in terms of information in our body is a danger message. In fact, let me hold that a second. Let me give you a third option, then I'll come back to what I mean by danger message. But here's a third option for that jumping up, cracking your toe. You jump up, you kick your toe, you break your toe in just the same way as both previous two examples, but you have fallen out with your partner and the kids are, you know, the kids are ill, they've got stuff going on in their lives, they've failed exams, and you've got a, your mortgage is just about to triple because cost of living concerns. How much is that same bodily injury going to hurt? 11 out of 10. It's going to be through the roof, isn't it?
Yeah, it's probably going to devastate you more as well, like on an emotional level, isn't it? Because it's going to be like the final straw.
What we've sort of picked apart with those three examples is pain is dependent on information from our body, and we call those danger messages. Pain is sort of determined by what is your psychology at that moment. It's like, what's your psychological world? How worried are you? How distracted are you? How occupied are you? How in control of life do you feel at the moment? How well have you just been sleeping for the last, you know, X number of nights? But also your social world. What's happening in your social world, your family dynamic, your relationships with parents, with partner, with kids, with work colleagues, financial freedom, autonomy to choose, you know, how to live your life. Is that high autonomy? You can choose what to do. Is that low autonomy? You're being told by DWP, you know, what you're allowed to do or not allowed to do. There's a concern about losing benefits if you're, you know, too active in some way. And in the center of those three things, this is what we call the biopsychosocial model, sort of sits health. Health comes out of all those three domains of variables, and part of health is pain. But pain has got bodily contributors, it's got emotional contributors, and it's got social contributors. So information in our body, we would call nociception. When your nerve, I know people can't see me, but you know, if I sort of pinged along my arm, there's a message coming up a nerve in my arm in towards my spinal cord. That's called nociception. And noci and noxious have got the same root. So nociceptors look out for stuff that will do you damage if it continues. So they react to high heat and low heat. They don't respond to warmth. They respond to inflammation, you know, critical for this, you know, the likely people who are listening to this. Inflammation in our tissues sensitizes these nociceptors and gets them sending messages, danger messages, in towards our spinal cord and up towards our brain. If you pinch yourself really hard or you pull really hard back on your thumb, when tissues are being stretched or compressed, you know, that's going to do me damage. So those things generate danger messages, which the brain has to interpret. Get danger messages at a time when you've just had a near miss car crash, or you've had a car crash. You know, you may have some danger from an injury, but your brain essentially goes, I don't need to know about that at the moment. I need to get the kids safe. I need to get off the motorway. And then the next day you realize that your neck is really aching because you've had a whiplash. Do you know the people, just whiplash as you've prompted a thought, but do you know the population in the world who have got least occurrence of whiplash injuries or whiplash related pain?
No, who?
Stock car drivers.
Okay, so how does that work?
Because they choose to go and get smashed around on a car driving rink every Saturday afternoon with their mates. You know, they've chosen to sort of be rear-ended by their buddies and smashed around in their cars. They've chosen that. Whereas if you're all driving home, Alan, and you get a rear impact from somebody, you are fuming about that rear impact. I did not choose this. I did not want this. So all sorts of things like context will make a difference to how our system interprets all of this information. Information from the body remains critical. Information from our social world, the context that we're in, information from our emotional world, all of those things, to me, they're a bit like a DJ mixing desk or a 1970s Rolling Stones mixing desk in the record studio. Every one of those sliders and variables, some of them, when they get slid up, pain, which is the tune that you're hearing from the from that record, from that band, the band, you know, as you change any single one of those variables, what the band sounds like might change. You could have things that turn up, make more intrusive that pain experience. Worry, high inflammation, poor sleep, people not believing this, you know, the story that you're telling to your healthcare professional, having to argue and advocate for yourself. You know, all of those things are likely to sort of be variables that shift the pain tune up. And there are variables there that might shift the pain tune down. Laughter, closeness, a good working relationship with your GP, your rheumatologist, therapist that you're seeing, supportive family, supportive work colleagues, the ability to, you know, take a break, being in control of your life, financial security. Those things are all quality sleep, good diet. Did I say laughter, intimacy? You know, all those things are probably going to just nudge the pain tune down a little bit. But that tune that's being played out of the record producer's mixing desk is actually made up of hundreds, perhaps, of variables.
This is kind of building that case for mental well-being has a massive role to play in our perception of pain, especially, and we'll talk about chronic pain in a minute, but these are things we need to try and help nurture ourselves, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I really like the phrase self-care. Whether you're self-care with no health conditions, whether you're self-care with a rheumatological condition, self-care, looking after yourself, I think it's really important to look at those three big areas in life. Physical, you know, are you moving enough but not too much? Are you staying fit and strong and flexible? Are you using medications appropriately to manage inflammatory state? Try to kind of cover all bases here. But are you also looking after the emotional world? Are you dealing with stresses in life? And those three circles kind of overlap. So some of these examples can kind of cross over. But, you know, are you dealing with work stresses? Are you dealing with life stresses? Having a long-term condition tends to be a stress.
Yeah.
Having long-term pain in itself tends to be a stress. So, you know, we often sort of see these spirals, don't we? Things can spiral out of control. But are you also socially looking after yourself? Lockdown, isolation through the last, you know, 3-4 years has had really profound effects on people in terms of how they, you know, lost social outlets.
Yeah.
Clubs, groups haven't come back in the way that they might have done from pre-COVID.
Absolutely. And stress is something that's not always in our control. I mean, you know, the pandemic again is a classic example of that. We were so unable to manage that. We had to just live through it, didn't we, as best we could. But it's interesting because it's recognizing when you're in a time of stress. I mean, a lot of people that I've talked to with similar conditions to mine, you know, they always cite stress as a trigger for a flare up. So there is, you know, we already acknowledge that there is already that link between our mental well-being and maybe our recognition of pain.
Yeah. I mean, it can be really interesting that, you know, our understanding about what triggers there can be. One, I think, a quite well-known story from an Australian physio. He worked with a person who was a baker. And they were working in their big baking, you know, bakery, and they got their hand caught in a really big mixing machine, and their hand was quite badly damaged. So this person had lots of surgery, reconstruction to their hand, to their limb. They were doing, you know, pretty well. But on Saturday mornings, they would have pain through the roof.
Right.
But not Sundays.
Right.
Not the weekdays, Saturday mornings. If they went on holiday or they went away from home, didn't really have the same experience. This is very much a pain on a Saturday morning when they were at home. And slowly they kind of worked this out. They worked it together. But, well, have you got any thoughts now? Why did this person have pain on a Saturday morning?
I'm assuming that Saturday was the busiest work day and that they associate the Sundays and the holidays with less stress or something.
Yeah, so I think this person wasn't working in the bakery anymore, but their neighbour was baking bread on a Saturday morning.
Oh, right. Okay.
So that almost subconscious, slightly yeasty bread baking smell coming through the window Saturday morning, maybe this person wasn't even really aware of it, but their system sort of went, hang on a second, be careful. Last time you got this smell, this sort of awareness, breaking bread, your hand got mangled in that thing, so be careful. So their treatment for that was sort of a graded exposure to the smell of baking bread, convincing the system that actually the system doesn't need to protect. It doesn't need to produce that pain experience, because actually not every time you smell baking bread did your hand get mangled.
So there was an association that was inappropriate going forwards. It was an association that was developed as a result of that accident.
And another really nice example. So I'm a bit of a cyclist. So I found this video of a cyclist who, in the Tour de France, a really fit, elite level cyclist. He came off his bike in the Tour de France some years ago. And he came off once on a left roundabout. Cyclists, if you watch the Tour recently, they get back up, they jump back on their bike. But the second roundabout, he slid off and he smashed his hip up. So he fractured his hip, he needed surgery. And then this video picks up with him just kind of getting back on his bike. He's getting back into training. He's a Kiwi, so I won't try and do the accent. But he says, I get back on my bike and I'm cycling along. And I come to this left roundabout. And I'm going around this roundabout and I just feel like my back wheel is about to slide out. He says, it isn't. But it almost is. When I go right, no problem at all. But when I go left, so to me, all those contributors, there's the knowledge that the last time you went left around a roundabout, you smashed your hip up. His body leaning, his balance is leaning to the left, his head is leaning to the left, he's steering to the left. This is all information into his system. But when he goes right, it's different. But when he goes left and his system didn't produce pain, but his system did produce a protective response, which in his case was don't pedal so fast. Back off. Don't risk that injury. And he says, I'm going to have to get over this, because if he's going to get back to performing at his highest level, he's going to have to get over that association that left roundabouts equals hip injury. But these are really interesting. I mean, these are both, this chap particularly, he's super fit, he's super strong, he's an elite Olympic level athlete. But these things, because I was almost thinking that it's cool, I should just say, as an opening to people, if we're talking about your brain or your system, this doesn't mean that your pain is made up. It doesn't mean that it's imagined. But it does mean that however it is that we are conscious of our body is dependent on so many variables that we just don't notice, we just don't give credit to. How we're aware of our body, how we're aware of our body, working in the world, either as a cyclist or any day-to-day life, we don't pay attention to most information. The system does, the brain, the spinal cord, and working out that association is really tricky sometimes.
Absolutely.
I tend to say this thing to people. I say there's four things I'd ask you to think about. If you're having fluctuating pain, one is, when pain gets worse, is there something really clearly physical? Did you really obviously overdo it in the garden, walk too far, stand for hours in a queue? Was it really obvious? You did too much, and that's irritated that pain experience. Number two, is there something really obvious emotional or socially related? You've had a bereavement, you've lost your job, you've fallen out with your partner, kids' health, something really obvious that's like when stress has gone up, pain's gone up. Three, have there been micro triggers that have just come together? You had a run of bad nights, sleep, you slightly had a bit of an argument at work with somebody, you kicked the cat walking home, two or three things that just kind of come together at inopportune time. Fourth is, it's just got a mind of its own. It is really hard sometimes to really find the minutiae, like the sort of smell of baking bread. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. And there may just not be anything that you can be certain of. Your point, though, I'd absolutely agree with, or what I kind of want people to do when they think about managing pain is, well, let's say it's stress. Yes, some life stresses aren't changeable, are they? Couldn't change. We couldn't. I have no handle on COVID, so I couldn't do anything about that. I can't change my view on current politics, or I can't change current politics directly. That's frustrating you, but I can't change that at the moment. So there are some stresses in life we can't alter. Okay, then we've got to deal with them differently. Are there stresses in life that you can alter? You know, are there stresses in life? Actually, let me talk to my boss, let me talk with the family, let me practice some relaxation regularly. Maybe stress is a dietary thing. Well, let's try, you know, gluten-free or lactose-free. Does that make a difference? Are there stresses in your life that you may have some control over? And you change that and you evaluate, does that make a difference to your experience of pain and or quality of life?
Definitely worth considering, seeing it as a bigger picture, seeing it as part of something and not just the one focus, as we were talking about. It's really interesting, Ben. Thank you so much.
Thank you to our expert guest today and to you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast and will listen in to all the other episodes in this series. BIRD are committed to helping patients increase knowledge about rheumatic conditions because we know this can have a really positive impact on living with them. We also have a great focus on enabling people to get involved in rheumatology research to help make sure that new medications and treatments meet the needs of patients. We couldn't do any of this without the help of our volunteers and the support of our donors and sponsors, all of whom we are immensely grateful to. You can sign up to be notified about all our podcasts and our patient engagement research opportunities by joining our mailing list. Just send an email to admin@birdbath.org.uk. The address and links are in the show notes.